I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies, a radio show where we talk about all things travel. Today, I have on the illustrious Jeff and Cindy Hoyt. Wow! Jeff is the producer to the show, and Cindy is his lovely wife. And these two rascals just came back from a trip to Europe where they went to Amsterdam, Wales, and Liverpool.
Yeah.
So tell me, you guys just came back like a week ago. Are you still a little jet lagged, little fuzzy in the head?
I got my first full night's sleep last night.
Nice.
Really good one.
And you guys were gone for 3 weeks?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Where'd you fly in and out of?
Into Amsterdam. Then we took an easy jet, one of those little short hoppers.
Yeah.
From Amsterdam direct to Liverpool, and then trained back to London for the flight home.
Nice. So then from Liverpool, you...
Liverpool, Wales.
Liverpool, we took a train to Wales.
Okay.
And then from Wales, we took a train to London.
Got it. So where was your favorite spot? Have you guys been to any of those places before?
Amsterdam, yes.
A lot.
Yeah.
Liverpool,
smoking
never.
The Mary Jane.
Wales, never.
Yes.
Did a little of that. We were on a canal boat, so we had just this, you know, 9 days of this wonderful view onto, and it was in nice, pretty nice weather. So all the boats were out, and it was just a parade of boats going past us. And we have this big living room that just looks out over it.
Wow.
Corner windows, you know, everything.
And so was it a stationary boat?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, all the boats were cruising by, and you guys just were idyllic there in your...
It was like a drive-in in the 50s, you know, where just everybody gets in their boats after work or especially on the weekends and brings a bottle of wine and a bunch of their friends.
Sounds so nice.
And it was, for one boat would go by and it's a bunch of bare-chested bros with beer and woohoo!
Like American bare-chested?
They could be from anywhere
they could
in the
be
world.
Anywhere.
The behavior was the same. They just looked different from each other.
The next boat goes by, and it's got a candelabra, and everybody has got wine glasses, and they're having sedate conversation.
I think I'd rather be on that boat.
Nice music. Well, there were fewer people urinating off that last car. That was kind of an eyebrow lifter.
Yeah, we witnessed somebody whipping it out.
I mean, full view.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
people have no shame.
And then the next boat might be...
I think he was too drunk.
The next boat might be a married couple who maybe have had a hard day and they just want to be out on the canal, but they're both sitting on their phones. And she's up in the bow and he's in the stern just steering. And they're not even talking to each other. And then the next boat is more partying, and it might be like a hen party, they called it, with the bridesmaids.
Yes,
and
the hens and stags.
Yeah, and it was just crazy.
And so tell me about your boat. So you guys, was it just you guys, or did you have friends with you?
Our daughter Natalie joined us for the Amsterdam leg. She'd never been there before.
Oh, mm-hmm. Awesome. So how big was the boat? Tell me about it.
Well, I don't know the dimensions, but it
I mean like a two-bedroom.
It was definitely two-bedroom.
Yeah.
And really nice, you know, nice and long, and a back deck where you could be outside. And
so would you guys go out to eat a lot, or would you make food on the boat?
We did a little both.
Yeah.
Mornings we would have breakfast there, but we would wander. It's just in a perfect neighborhood right in the center of Amsterdam. You can walk
in the
anywhere.
Historic district.
Nice. And what would you consider like a quintessential Dutch lunch?
Oh, you know, They're so international.
I was
going to
say,
it's
really international.
It's hard to pin it.
Lots of interesting sandwiches.
With gouda.
Yeah, yeah. And lots and lots of cheese. We had lots and lots of cheese.
And the breakfasts were all about what they call pancakes and what we would call crepes.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then the dessert was always what they call apple pie or apple tart and what I would call meh.
So you didn't like it.
I love American apple pie, but the the crust just has to be perfect. And it was just more like an apple base with a little cakey stuff on top.
Yeah. Mm. I was fine with it.
Jeff loves it.
I probably would have been fine with it too.
Yeah.
I'm just very particular.
Well, come on. There's nothing better than good old fashioned American apple pie. There's they do make a version, and it probably originated there more than here, even is in Ireland. They do like an apple tart. And although it looks like a flat version of an apple pie, but it doesn't have the crispiness, uh-huh, like the dough itself. It's not like a laminated dough. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, but not as good as an apple pie. So I do understand
German
that.
Strudel is the same.
It's, yes.
If you get you can occasionally get a really good strudel that'll have a nice crust, but otherwise it's just kind of like, no.
Well, it is what they...
But
yeah,
we had no complaints about the food, generally speaking.
We were in a spectacular spot. We were, as a matter of fact, we were much envied by people that would be walking across the bridge next to our boat, and they would be looking down into the window, the open window on mm-hmm. two sides that we had there, and they would just be snapping photos of us.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Like, you know, look at these native Amsterdammers in their habitat.
Yeah, yeah. And then the people in the boats going by would be looking in, and there was just clear, I want to do what you're doing. And we had this weird other dimension to the whole time we spent in Amsterdam, because there was a family of coots. Right?
What's that?
That's a bird. It's a water bird.
We have them here, too, in Puget Sound.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They're mostly black with a
little
sort of a
reddish
whitish
nose
color.
Beak.
I would have said whitish.
White,
said
white, on, the, white on the head and kind of an orange beak. And they they dive for fish and they do the whole thing. But there was a nest right underneath the front edge corner of our
It was actually
houseboat.
Built on the piling, that one of the pilings we were attached to.
So there were these two baby coots that were, who knows how old they were, but they were a combination of...
They were really ugly, so they must have been quite young.
Yeah, they were ugly but cute. They were cute ugly.
Yeah.
They were cugly.
Yeah.
Cugly.
Cugly.
Yeah, I like that term.
They had the little sparse
I've seen a lot of human babies that are cugly.
All that.
Yeah. Yeah, they were
true.
Like awkward. They were like awkward adolescents. You know, there was something spiky and weird about their fur. But,
like the tweens.
But people would go by in the boat, and they would see us first and engage us in conversation. You know, we'd only be about 10 feet apart. Hey, how are you? Where are you from? You know, that sort of thing. They're floating by, and then Natalie would sort of, with her hand, sweep their direction down.
Like Carol Merrill on a game show.
To the nest, and then especially all the women on the boat would go, oh, coots. And we did this for hours. And it never got old.
Why would it? You got baby coots and passerbyers.
And they would have moments where the baby coots would go across the canal, and we'd think, no, baby coots, don't do that. There's lots of traffic out there. And boats would be coming, and they'd get separated, and we'd think...
From their parents.
Did the one on the far side survive? We don't know yet. The boat has to go by, and then up it would pop. Yay, the coot survived. We were doing a lot of that.
That is your entertainment.
But we were in Amsterdam, and there was a lot of weed.
Well, it sounds like there was a lot of weed to make that be entertaining. I was thinking that, and then I thought, I don't want to be presumptuous. I was going to be kind and say wine, but, you know, weed is better
there
when you're there.
There was that, too.
But you can have that anywhere.
Very true.
But you can't. I don't think you could still walk around with a bottle of wine. You could boat around with a bottle of wine.
In Amsterdam?
No, and so many museums. We went to tons of museums.
Did you?
And six or seven.
Yeah.
We were lost.
Like, I mean, it's...
You been there? I mean, you've been to Amsterdam, but had you been to the museums before?
Only the only one we had been to before, we had Natalie pick, because we've been there a couple of times. And we had her just go through ahead of time, and she chose several museums. And we actually had only been to one of them before, and that's the Big Daddy, the Rijksmuseum.
Hmm. And what's in there? So,
the Dutch masters.
Mostly Dutch masters.
I've not been in there.
The Rembrandts and...
Oh, yeah.
Cigar box covers.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the Dutch masters cigar box cover... is a painting. I was like, wait a minute, I've seen that before. Mm-hmm. My mom used to keep little vials of glitter in it when I was a kid.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
So Amsterdam was very young and hip, and you know, yeah, we were definitely older than most as we wandered around, but it's just a great walking town, and you can just go and go and go and in any direction, and there's always something interesting.
It's cool. It has such a cool energy.
Yeah.
It really does.
It really does.
When I was like 18, my friend Sarah and I went there for the first time, and we ended up finding this crazy squat, like this old punk rock squat. But it was even then, and this was like 1989, it was so progressive even then, where they were like, it was like a political squat where they were like had rules, and it was like,
oh,
you know, they were like, I don't know, just had it together in this really amazing way where I was like, wait a second, I've never been to one so organized before. This is amazing.
Almost like a commune. A well-organized commune.
Kind of, but not really. Yeah. I don't know. It just had, I mean, it had more like freedom, I think, than a commune. But from what I would think of as a commune, which doesn't necessarily sound like a lot of fun to me.
You know, I've always thought that too, but that's a whole other conversation. You should read the book Drop City, though. That'll tell you a lot.
Did you write it?
No.
Oh, I don't know it.
I wish I had.
Oh. Is that about, obviously, that was, about living on a commune?
I think that was T.C. Boyle that wrote that one. But then we moved on to Liverpool, unless you had some more questions about answering.
No, no. Well, I just had one other question. How long in advance do you have to like rent one of those barges or canal?
We don't know because we're lucky in that we have a friend who
has a boat.
Oh, I did know that actually. And so, yeah. That makes life a lot easier.
It's just and like, we got to go visit them on their other houseboat.
They have also in got Amsterdam. An even bigger boat on the Amstel.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good for them.
And that's a beautiful neighborhood and a park and all that.
Do they rent it out or just to friends?
They live there. Oh, you mean the one in central Amsterdam. Well, they've gone both ways.
Yeah.
They've rented it out and they've just said anybody that wants to come hang out for a few days.
Maybe I want to know these people.
Yeah, I think you do.
So tell me about Liverpool. What brought you there?
The Beatles. Well, yeah, okay, and transit. You know, we had to get to Chirk, England, which was a small town about an hour and a half south of there, for the last leg of our trip, which we'll tell you about on the Welsh canals. But
yeah, this is not that I don't want to go and talk about Liverpool, but I'm really intrigued with your Wales trip.
Well, we can just go quickly over Liverpool then.
Yeah.
And just say.
So obviously you're a big Beatles fan.
We're big Beatles fans. We grew up with the Beatles, you know, there are markers.
Yeah, and, sure.
And we might not have done this had we not been planning to be about 90 minutes away from there when we picked up this canal boat later.
Right.
So we thought, let's go to Liverpool and do all the Beatles stuff. And so we just
went completely,
you know, all in touristy, you know, let's do Beatles stuff. And it was fantastic.
Are there still like a lot of other tourists that come there for the Beatle memorabilia?
I would say the area around the harbor and a few blocks in it's practically a Beatles museum.
Wow.
I mean, there is an official Beatles museum.
Couple of them.
Which is pretty, Beatles one, and then there's the Liverpool Music Museum, because a lot of musicians came from Liverpool.
Like Elvis Costello, Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
I saw them once.
Oh, yeah?
Well,
then you saw the brother of our tour guide for Beatles Homes.
The lead singer of Frankie Goes to Hollywood took us around to the Beatles places.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right now.
Went to school with the Beatles, you know. He did. It was It was great. We got on a little bus and they took us to Penny Lane and they took us to Strawberry Field and
aww.
And we saw these play. We saw all the things that are referred to in Penny Lane. The what is it on the roundabout?
The shelter in the middle of the roundabout.
The shelter in the middle of the roundabout.
The pretty nurse is selling poppies from a tray.
It's there. It's there.
Although she's gone.
She's got it.
Yeah.
There's no nurse anymore.
No. But it was surreal to be in these spots that inspired these songs. But the coup de grace was a tour that we took that you had to sign up for in advance. There's no way you can do it on your own through like a national trust or something.
Yeah, because Paul McCartney donated his childhood home and Yoko Ono bought John Lennon's home in 2003 and she donated it to the trust.
Wow.
So you can't go inside George's home or Ringo's old home because those are privately owned.
Are they owned still by their families?
No.
No, just other people. No.
They were not big deal places.
Uh-huh.
You can drive past, but you can't go in those two, but you can go in.
So what
John
was Paul McCartney's childhood home like?
Well,
simple.
It was yeah. kind of a sure. You know, a working class home. His mother was a nurse, and she got it as kind of part of her job, this little house.
Oh, they gave it to her?
Yeah. As a, you know, I think it was a rental where they paid the rent, that kind of thing.
Got it.
And
what about John's?
Pretty cool. John's was actually a little nicer that his aunt lived
right,
in.
Right, because he lived with his aunt,
in.
Right? Not mm-hmm. his mother.
Yeah.
What was the deal? Did she just give him up or?
Well,
his mother died.
No, John's mother more like gave him up.
No, she gave him
she
up.
She gave him up, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And his aunt took him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then it was only later in life that...
That he met his, yeah. his mother.
Yeah, yeah his mother turned out to be, you know, like still
get
living
together,
in Liverpool
Jeff.
And everything. So
crazy.
It was really strange.
So did she want to get to know him once he was famous?
Actually, even earlier than that.
Oh, good.
She was the one who bought him his first... guitar, which she played the banjo, and so he played the guitar more like a banjo for many years. And it did not until he met Paul did he learn how to correctly tune and play a guitar.
Oh, interesting. That's fascinating.
And we went past the place where they first met and they first played together. We saw that as well. But the homes were they had a holy quality to them.
Yeah.
Because they just were where so much stuff happened, you know.
Right.
All these early songs were being written there, and we were standing in Paul's house in the living room, and there's this sort of fake brick wallpaper on mm-hmm. the walls, and there's a picture hanging on the wall, and it's of a very young Paul and a very young John with their guitars sitting in that corner of the room, and they are clearly working on a song. And they asked if we could guess what the song was, and we couldn't really come up with anything because how do you just
yeah
how
right.
do you just
they're
pick
so
one.
They're so prolific
song,
how many
early lexicon
but
yeah.
but this was the song.
1, 2, 3, 4
We were standing
we were
there.
Standing there. We saw them.
Sitting there. It was just like you could imagine it. And it was there was it was surreal, I'm telling you. It was
how
it was,
old were they when they wrote that song?
Like 18.
Yeah.
God, that's so crazy.
Yeah, maybe 19.
I think George was 15.
I mean, it really was kismet that they all came together.
Yeah.
It really was.
And, you know, we went upstairs into John's room, as did Bob Dylan once. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
And he said, I wanted to be in this house so I could look out the window of John's bedroom and imagine all the, you know, inspiration within his frame of reference.
Mm-hmm. Which was mostly the house across the street.
I was going to say, what was the view?
I think it was more of a field, actually.
Well, that was Paul's bedroom.
Paul's bedroom was more of a field, but of course everything's grown up a little bit.
Constabulary horse paddock behind Paul's house.
And what are the neighborhoods like? Are they still working class or no? They're probably nicer now.
A little
nicer. I would say middle class or whatever that looks like. Anymore.
I mean, does Liverpool still feel like a... That was always a middle class, like lower middle class.
Not
always,
that's changed a lot.
It was a manufacturing town, shipbuilding town for a long time, including when they grew up.
And then now when container ships started getting built, their shipbuilding industry kind of cratered. And they had to convert their economy, and they started moving toward Beatles tourism.
Yeah, really?
Is that really what the...
It's not the whole city.
It's an actually pretty big city.
Yeah, it's a big city.
But
Beatles tourism is a big deal.
It's a factor.
Wow.
And we went to Matthew Street, which is where the Cavern Club is.
The what club?
The Cavern Club, which is where they first used to play together. Those were their first gigs.
Sometimes three shows a day.
They did a lunch show.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine taking your lunch and go down and hearing the Beatles do a little, 45 minutes.
Yeah, kind of work out the kinks on I Want to Hold Your Hand.
They did like 300 shows a year, something like that, at the Cavern Club.
Wow.
For a couple of years.
But
Epstein discovered them there.
Mm-hmm.
The other surreal moment, and then we'll move off of Liverpool, was at John's house, because John had a bigger house and... very nice, actually. It was, comparatively speaking, Paul's bedroom was like barely wide enough for a single bed.
Oh, wow.
It was very small. But over at John's, they said, go out and stand on the front porch. There's a little glassed-in front porch.
Not very big, maybe 3x5.
Yeah, and he said, that's where Aunt Mimi used to shoo the boys because they were making too much noise. And so they would go out onto the front porch, and it would be John and George and Paul, and they would... they're in a glassed-in porch, and they would start to harmonize, work on harmonies, and go, oh, it sounds really good in here. And it became kind of their go-to place to stand around and work on stuff.
Work out their harmonies.
Work on stuff like...
standing where he and John and George figured out, okay, you go low and I'll go high.
It's amazing that they had that space and they actually figured it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
at that age
they were so beyond their years musically.
It really was delightful. I really thought, oh God, this is going to be the most touristy, cheesy thing we're ever going to do.
But it wasn't.
We loved it. We just had a great time.
And the pictures all over the place of all of them in the houses were just like, you're standing in the kitchen, and here's a picture of all four of them standing in this kitchen. And
I wonder if Paul ever goes back to Liverpool.
Well, he has a house there still.
He does.
Yeah, and he does apparently show up from time to time.
Once a year to give an award at his old school. That's a scholarship or something.
That's awesome.
So off from Liverpool, we went on the train down to Chirk, which is right on the Welsh border. And that is where we got on a big floating RV, 58 feet long, 7 feet wide.
Okay, so the pictures that you posted it literally looks like you're on a boat that's on like a track. And then it literally could just fall off into the cliff.
Oh, that's the viaduct.
Yeah, it felt a little like that on the viaduct.
It looked just like that on the photo.
It looked like basically an I-beam that was holding in the water into our slot of canal.
Yes.
And then how many feet was it?
160 feet.
And then 160 feet drop into
the valley below.
The valley below. And it was, and the canal boats don't have, they would never pass American standards because they don't have railings or gates
on the sides.
You know, you could just
step
sideways and bam, down you go.
Just fall right off.
We didn't.
Yeah. So does it go all through Wales? Where did you go?
There are canals all over the UK.
Right. And no, but these ones that you did particularly in Wales, I mean,
it was
There are definitely more canals in Wales. We only took it out for 4 nights because we were really not sure what we were getting. And I frankly wasn't sure how fun it would be.
And so did you have somebody with you?
No.
There's just you guys.
Yeah.
No, they took us out of the marina and said, here's how you steer. Here's how it starts. Here's with that how that works. Here's how that works.
And here is the principle of the lock.
Yeah.
Teaching us very well how to manipulate.
Take this winch, crank it up, crank it down. That's the lock. And I'm going to step off now and you go.
And they they had to take us out of their marina because apparently we were only insured once we were on the canal itself.
And I was going to say, man, it doesn't seem very safe.
After watching Jeff try to turn the boat around a couple of times, I realized why you were not insured in the marina.
And so are there rooms in there? Like how big are...
Well, no.
But you sleep on it.
There is one big, long space.
Yeah.
And there is a bathroom.
There's partitions.
So there's one actual, you know, toilet and a real tiny shower.
There's a galley.
And a sink. And that's got an actual door. But everything else is just open plan.
And there's a kitchen?
Yeah, there's a little galley. Mm-hmm.
You did say galley.
And you have a hallway, basically, on one side of the boat. And then you pass a bed. And then you pass the bathroom. And then you pass another bed. And then you pass the galley. And then you're in the living space. And then you're on the bow deck.
So how long is it?
58 feet.
Oh, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is not the first time that you've driven a boat.
We couldn't both go down the corridor or the passageway at the same time.
I've been at the tiller of a sailboat before, and so I'm not unfamiliar with boats completely, but this thing is like 15 tons and it's super heavy and slow, and so if you oversteered and the boat was steering toward the left side of the canal and there's another boat coming, you got to correct, and the bow would just move very slowly back across, and then you would clear the boat that's coming the other direction.
Wow. And then you have to correct again, or it will keep going into the side of the canal.
Yeah. So first, we were making mistakes.
Yes.
And at first?
Throughout, we were making mistakes. And there were times when Cindy's down there making tea in the galley, and I'm going, brace for impact. And we.
So I'm grabbing the kettle and grabbing the bottle of wine to keep it from falling over. You know.
And I hit the side of the wall, or I bang into the bridge. And these boats are indestructible.
There are a lot of bridges.
They didn't care.
Really? They don't care.
No.
Well, they build them for that.
Yeah. They said.
It's like bumper cars.
I
thought of that. Bumper boats.
Yeah, bumper
boats. We collided with a couple of boats.
It sounds like, you know, it sounds almost like bumper paddle boats. Do you remember paddle boats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Of course it isn't, but I mean, it's sort of like.
It had that quality to it.
Yeah.
But then we would go and go and go, and then we'd, you know, we'd see a lot of sheep and a lot of cows and little villages and neighborhoods. And then we'd.
Would you stop and get out at the villages?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were really only two villages.
Yeah. We only.
The one at the right hand nexus point, our east and our west, and our left hand nexus point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you had to really bring all your own, like, rations and stuff.
Yeah. We stopped at a grocery store. Basically, your taxi can pick you up at the train and they'll wait while you go into what's really a convenience store.
Okay.
And pick up some basics.
Right.
So we had basics and a couple of ready-made meals just in case we couldn't get into a town for the night. Mm-hmm. But then you go until the end of the day and then you just stop along the canal and you stake off the boat. And set up for
the
night.
They give you a hammer and a couple of big-ass tent stakes. And
bang, bang, bang.
And so what are the names of the villages that you went into? I love the Welsh language. I love the accent so much.
In England, it was Chirk and Ellesmere.
Well,
and then
Chirk was
English.
Where we took off. That's right.
And then in Wales, it was Trevor, which is by the aqueduct. And
that was just a tavern.
Llangollen.
Which you don't even want to know how that's spelled.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And that was a very cool, very
we
nice.
We really liked that.
Yeah, we loved that town. And it was in a beautiful spot on a great river that was down below the canal.
Did you go out and have pints and...
Oh, yeah. We had a great corner spot on a deck, and it was the most beautiful day of that whole leg of the trip. Sunny and warm, and we... And it was just packed out there. And one of those serendipitous moments where you're going, there's no place to sit. And then the couple in the best table get up and leave.
Oh, God.
Yes.
That's fortuitous.
Yeah, that was
Did
nice.
You guys meet anybody fun while you were there? Like
no,
any
not
new friends
really.
Or anything?
They were, everyone was super nice, but you're either passing each other, going the opposite direction, or they're parked for the night and you're not ready. Or vice versa.
Yeah, on the canal, I think you run into people multiple times. If you're there for 7, 10 days, 2 weeks, you're going to see the same people over and over again.
Yeah.
And in that instance, I think there's an opportunity to kind of get to know folks. But we were only on the boat for 4 nights.
Yeah,
we did have some cool evenings. Like in Liverpool, we met a couple of Welsh college students and wound up sitting and drinking with them.
That was super
sweet.
Fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they were super nice and charming and lovely and gave us all kinds of information.
Like, wanted to know about our lives.
Yeah.
I'm going, wait.
But you're so young.
You're 21 and
interested.
You want to hear
I know,
from
I'm
a
surprised.
You're being so respectful. What's that about?
And I was like, oh, your parents raised you well.
And I guess both sets of parents raised them well.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And they told us about this cool bar. You guys should learn how to do this. It's called Alchemy. We went and checked it out. They have these wild drinks. I mean, they have all kinds. It's all about chemistry, the whole theme of the place. And so they make a drink where you have a glass, and it kind of looks like the shape of a martini glass, maybe.
Yeah.
A little deeper, and whatever it's got in it, after a while, it forms this large, like 3-inch diameter clear bubble. And then they stick something in the side of it and inject smoke into
it. Oh, yes. Yeah.
So you've seen this.
Things
man,
like
I
that.
Never
yeah.
saw that before. It was so cool.
I mean, I've not had one.
Uh-huh.
And but then I've heard word.
Yeah.
You so I guess, these yeah.
Hire a chemist over at Home Sweet Home and let's get on that.
I'm gonna.
So I wonder if when you try to drink it, your nose pops the bubble or what?
I don't know. You're going to have to find out, Cindy.
Have to go back.
Well, I want to welcome you guys back. I'm glad you had a fantastic trip.
Thank you.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much. This is Megan Hastings with the Cats and Jammer Follies. And stay tuned for next week.